Matter of Frank Caraballo versus City of Jersey City Police Department. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Sure. Good morning, City Attorney. Scott Caraballo, Assistant Corporation Counsel of the Jersey City Law Department for the appellant, City of Jersey City Police Department.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Curley for the plaintiff respondent, Frank Caraballo.
Good morning, Your Honor. Evan Goldman from the law firm of Goldman Davis on behalf of Advocates New Jersey Association of Justice.
Good morning, counsel. Welcome. We're going to break at 12:30 or thereabouts. I don't know if we'll get through the argument. It might incentivize us to go a little quicker, but that's not the reason I tell you, just to allow everybody to prepare. If need be, we'll come back after and finish. Mr. Carbone, please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that in mind, I'll speed it up. I'd like to reserve from the outset 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if possible. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the JCPD in this case appeals from an opinion of the Appellate Division, which reversed a grant of summary judgment received in the Law Division on plaintiff's sole remaining count in his complaint, which was for a violation of the law against discrimination, and more specifically, a claim for disability discrimination brought under a failure to accommodate theory. The opinion of the Appellate Division below was erroneous and inconsistent with published opinions both of this Court as well as the Appellate Division itself, and should be reversed. First, prior to initiating a cause of action in the Superior Court against a workers' compensation carrier or self-insured employer, as was the case here, in which an alleged denial of a benefit in a workers' compensation case is at issue, the plaintiff is first required to exhaust enforcement remedies available under the Workers' Compensation Act regulations and the Workers' Compensation Act itself. Failure to do so bars the plaintiff from bringing such an action for damages unless the Act itself authorizes that specific course of action in the Superior Court. In this case, it does not. Plaintiff failed to utilize the enforcement remedies in his effort to obtain knee replacement surgery, which is essentially the very benefit that he uses to support his LAD failure to accommodate claim in this case. For the Appellate Division to have permitted plaintiff to do so, and thereby making the issue one for a jury, runs afoul of this Court's opinion in Stanciel versus ACUSA, decided in 2012, and the published opinion of the Appellate Division in Flick versus PMA Insurance Company, which was decided in 2007, both of which require plaintiffs in a civil action to have exhausted enforcement remedies available under the Act, the Workers' Compensation Act, that is, prior to filing a case seeking damages in Superior Court, especially when they are based on that same benefit being sought. Indeed, in this case, plaintiff not only failed to utilize these important enforcement remedies under the Workers' Compensation Act to obtain a desired surgery, but he settled that workers' compensation case, which went on for over 10 years without ever having been approved for or having had the surgery, but rather for a cash payment. Second, the Appellate Division erroneously held that a police officer who, based upon the substantial medical evidence in the record, was not able to perform the essential function of his position, either with or without a reasonable accommodation, was nonetheless a qualified individual under the LAD. The Appellate Division also failed to properly consider or give due weight to the special role that police officers play in this state, and the resulting public safety concerns if police officers who are not qualified individuals are nevertheless permitted to remain in these important positions. This Court's own opinion in RASPA versus Gloucester County Sheriffs and the published opinion of the Appellate Division in Esalen versus Township of North Bergen both suggest that in order to meet the qualified individual test, a law enforcement officer must be able to perform the full functions of the position or be able to return to the full functions of the position with the assistance of an accommodation. Indeed, the unpublished opinion of the Appellate Division, which is, I believe, not controlling here, but certainly provides guidance in Banowski versus the City of Irvington specifically held that an officer must be able to perform the full functions of the position in order to be considered a qualified immunity. In order to be considered a qualified individual under the LAD. Employers also may deny a reasonable accommodation to an employee altogether when the nature and extent of the disability of that individual precludes their adequate job performance, which was the exact situation in this case based on the medical evidence presented below. Here, the unique role of the police officer and the serious public safety implications inherent in officers not being able to perform their full functions, which by law they may be called upon to perform at any time, the Jersey City Police Department urges this court to adopt the full functions test or the return to the full functions duty standard for sworn law enforcement officers in these failure to accommodate cases. However, even if the court applies the pure essential functions test, the opinion of the appellate division should still be reversed as there was overwhelming evidence in the record below that made clear that plaintiffs simply could not perform the essential functions of a police officer with the benefit of a reasonable accommodation. This case also presents significant issues of public importance and of public policy. First, this court has not directly addressed, at least to our understanding, the interplay between the Workers' Compensation Act and the law against discrimination's reasonable accommodation requirement. Perhaps this case presents the perfect storm in which the court is going to consider that. How this court decides this case will definitely have broad implications for injured employees when medical benefits sought or even considered in a workers' compensation case are intertwined with a concurrent or future LAD case, as was the situation here. Towards that point, the range and complexity of treatment options available to injured employees is very vast and very complex. In fact, occupational medicine is essentially a subset of the medical profession which has been spawned by this exact need. And many medical professionals now donate or dedicate their entire careers to that practice of occupational medicine. The reason for this is that decisions about treatment modalities and medical interventions required to treat injured employees and how to get those employees back to work as efficiently and as quickly as possible do not belong in the Superior Court, and especially do not belong in a failure to accommodate case brought under the LAD. Such complex medical determinations, to the extent they cannot be resolved between the injured employee and the carrier or the self-insured employer through the assistance of counsel, through the assistance of medical professionals and attorneys, are best suited for the judges of compensation who possess a superior ability to review and resolve these kind of disputes. In this sense, the judges of compensation are akin to decisions of administrative agencies who this court has always recognized as possesses a superior ability to opine and enforce their own regulations and interpret enabling statutes from which those regulations flow, and they accord those agencies deference when reviewing their opinions and conclusions. The legislature has through the years revised sections of the Workers' Compensation Act and its regulations to better meet this particular goal. Important here, the legislature has enacted enforcement mechanisms by which an employee may challenge decisions of an employer or a carrier regarding medical benefits and treatment, including the failure to authorize treatment, with the judges of compensation. The regulations accompanying the Workers' Comp Act even provide a specific framework for sanctions to be imposed against a employer or carrier who unreasonably fails to comply with orders of the workers' compensation judges, and unless these mechanisms are first exhausted with the judges of compensation, who will establish a record and a rationale for their decisions, the Superior Court judges will unnecessarily be embroiled in fact-sensitive and very complex decisions regarding ongoing medical treatment for injured employees. Or worse, if such a enforcement remedy is not utilized and the Superior Court judge is called on to evaluate a case under the law against discrimination for failure to accommodate, that judge will be left to second guess the intentions of the parties as to the particular benefit at issue, medical benefit at issue, without the assistance of any such record from the judge of compensation. Simply stated, this is the exact problem that the legislature sought to avoid in crafting the enforcement mechanisms available under the Workers' Compensation Act. The resolution of the LAD and failure to accommodate claim, to the extent that this court needs to reach it, and if it agrees with the JCPD on the first claim, we would suggest that it does not, is likewise of public significance because it involves the special role of the police officer.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
If the knee surgery had been successful and allowed Officer Carabiar to perform the essential functions of his job, you would have kept him on the police force, correct?
Yes, if Officer Caraballo had the knee surgery and had successfully recovered to that, passed the fitness for duty evaluations and could have performed the full functions of a police officer, he would have rejoined the force. That's correct.
Did Jersey City approve his knee surgery?
Jersey City did not approve his knee surgery. It did not disapprove his knee surgery. The record is rather ambiguous on whether or not there was a formal decision made on that policy. I will tell you that the knee surgery itself, let me put it another way. If Mr. Caraballo wanted to have the knee surgery and he was getting either he felt dragged along or that Jersey City wasn't being fast enough and authorizing it or wasn't authorizing it under the conditions that he wanted, it was incumbent upon him to go to the enforcement mechanisms in the Workers' Compensation Act and force them to do so.
So I understand that. But did your doctors say he needed the knee surgery?
Our doctor said he needed the knee surgery, not necessarily to be able to perform the functions of a police officer, but more in the course of treatment, that he would need the knee surgery just in life for his own personal health and things of that
so
nature.
So if your doctors did that, why wouldn't you just have approved it? Like, why would there be any hesitation about approving the knee surgery?
Well, Your Honor, as our expert, Dr. Hutter, pointed out in his evaluation or in his report, give me 1 second, I'll get to that. He did note that the plaintiff was overweight and had a cardiac condition, that there was a severe limitation due to bilateral arthritis in the knees, and in his opinion, plaintiff never obtained the knee surgery due to his own choice or because he could not obtain the required clearance for the knee surgery, which would have most likely been cardiac clearance or some other kind of medical clearance to obtain it.
Who is this? Is this an expert he went to or one that you got for
litigation?
This
was an expert who evaluated the plaintiff after the case had been filed.
Okay, so let's talk about before the filing. Did your doctors clear him for the knee surgery? I'm not talking about experts that you got for litigation.
No, they did not. They suggested that the knee surgery would be necessary, but he was never cleared for the knee surgery. And it seems to be from the record that that's why the Jersey City Risk Management Department never authorized the knee surgery, because there was no clearance for it.
Assuming for the sake of argument that there was an issue as to whether he followed up or not, from what I can tell from the facts in the record, or whether the follow-up for Jersey City Police Department, the issue of providing the surgery or not would be part of the Workers' Compensation Act and part of a workers' compensation claim. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, could
it
you
would
repeat
not be,
that?
It would not involve a litigation in court under the LAD. It would be enforcement or seeking remedies under Workers' Compensation
Act. Yes, that's right, Your Honor. And
what would prevent anyone who's denied from them proceeding under the LAD and bringing it out of the workers' compensation realm?
Well, Your Honor, that's the position that I believe the legislature was trying to avoid, and the situation that the legislature was trying to avoid in crafting the enforcement mechanisms that they did for workers' compensation cases.
This case was, the workers' compensation case was settled, is that correct?
Yes, the workers' compensation case was settled during the pendency of the LAD case.
Is there a res judicata or collateral estoppel argument to be made here in the LAD case because of by virtue of the settlement not seeking benefits in a workers' compensation case?
Although I didn't specifically phrase it that way in the briefs, Your Honor, I think that is in essence one of the arguments that we're making here. Is that if the workers' compensation case was resolved for a cash payment without ever having had the surgery or had the surgery authorized, that should certainly prevent plaintiff from bootstrapping that particular claim, i.e. the denial of the benefit, to an LAD claim and then bringing it in the Superior Court.
Your adversary suggests that because at least the doctor suggested he needed the knee surgery. There's nothing for the workers' compensation court to adjudicate once 2006, that evaluation occurred in 2006. So why can't he jump directly to Superior Court? What's your response to that?
Because that's not the way that the Workers' Compensation Act functions. The Workers' Compensation Act has a mechanism by which if there's a dispute between an injured employee and the employer or the carrier, it's incumbent upon the employee, if he's seeking a particular benefit or payment for particular benefits, to go to the judge of workers' compensation and to make a motion for it. And the judge, he'll look at the medical evidence, he'll look at the law, he'll come up with a rationale for his decision, it'll be on the record. And then to the extent that the self-insured employer or the carrier is still not going to obey the order that the workers' compensation judge puts out, the plaintiff can come back and ask for a contempt order. And the judge will most likely issue that contempt order if he finds that the particular relief he ordered previously hadn't been provided. Only under those circumstances would the plaintiff then be able to go to Superior Court to enforce that contempt order. And it seems to me, at least from...
There are cases, Counselor, where employees can go directly to court.
That's right,
under
Judge.
Certain criteria.
I was going to get to that.
Present here?
Yes. There are. There are a couple of exceptions by which employees can sort of skip these procedures that are in the Workers' Compensation Act and go directly to Superior Court. One would be the anti-retaliation provisions of the Workers' Compensation Act. There's no exhaustion requirement in there. In fact, the Workers' Compensation Act specifically says they can go to Superior Court and do that. The other would be the enforcement mechanisms that we're talking about. Once a judge of compensation issues a contempt order against an employer or a carrier, the employee can take that to Superior Court
matter. Let's say the carrier doesn't, let's say total exhaustion of remedies. Superior Court, contempt, and they still say, forget about it. We're not doing anything. Under those circumstances, would a LAD claim be available?
I wouldn't think so, Judge. I would think that under those circumstances, most likely they would probably seek further review in the appellate division or in this court. But I honestly couldn't see a situation in which a judge of the Superior Court, on a full record established by a judge of compensation, would say, well, I'm not going to enforce those particular sanctions or those particular benefits that the compensation judges determined the employee was eligible for or entitled to. Unless there was some real significant problem with the analysis done by the judge of compensation.
Here we have the rather novel argument that somehow this scenario has given rise to an LAD failure to accommodate claim. Now, in New Jersey, our failure to accommodate law under the regulation says look to the ADA for reasonable accommodation. Is there any federal case that has found failure to accommodate being met under the ADA because of a denial or deprivation of a workers' comp claim for medical services?
Judge, that's a great question. Justice, that's a great question, and one I searched high and low for. I was unable to find one.
Well, I found one. I found Desmond versus Yale New Haven Hospital, 738 F sub 2nd 331, where a very similar argument was being made that the workers' comp failure to get services gave rise to a failure to accommodate, and it was rejected outright as not giving rise to a failure to accommodate basis under the ADA. I asked you the question to find out whether there was anything else out there in the universe that would give, which would go the other way, because I sure can't find the ADA viewing this workers' comp basis as a failure to accommodate.
Right. I mean, the closest case, federal case that I found dealing with this issue, and it wasn't directly on point. I think, as I said before, we have very unique facts here. This is sort of a perfect storm situation, was the Holbrook case out of the 11th Circuit, and it cited to the ADA field manual, and that case was also a police officer case in which the, also a detective case, and Mr. Caraballo was a detective as well, in which there was an accident and an eye injury which prevented the detective from seeing things properly, and as a result, he really wasn't able to be out in the field. He was accommodated for a short period of time. They sent another officer with him, but eventually, due to the severity of the eye injury, he was relieved of his duties as a police officer and filed a claim under the ADA against the employing police department.
But I'm drilling down on a situation where someone says, I didn't get a service, a medical treatment that I feel was due to me under the workers' comp scheme, notwithstanding its exclusivity. And that has rendered me sufficiently disabled that I can bring an ADA claim. And in this case that I'm looking at, where this person made that exact same argument, that was not found to be the kind of argument that can get one out from under the exclusivity of a workers' comp scheme in Connecticut.
Okay. I would only have to assume that was based on Connecticut's workers' compensation statute.
Well, we have the same exclusivity requirement as well, don't we?
We do, as do most workers' compensation statutes.
So even outside of workers' comp, is there a medical treatment and accommodation?
Generally not, Judge. Generally not, Justice Albin. And the reason for that is that the federal law under the ADA kind of draws a distinction between a reasonable accommodation which would benefit the employee on his job and performing certain duties and roles in that job, and one that would more generally be considered a benefit to him in his everyday life.
Does reasonable accommodation generally require the provision of medical treatment to restore bodily functions as opposed to adjust the work environment of the employer?
Not to our understanding, Judge. Most of the accommodations are modifications to buildings, modifications
times,
to desks.
Times, hours.
Correct. A shortened work day and things of that nature. I'm not aware of any cases in which a medical treatment or a surgical intervention, such as was being sought in this case, was considered a basis by which a failure to accommodate claim could be supported.
Indeed, the theory here seems to be that the accommodation must be to resolve the underlying disability so that an accommodation is not necessary. That's the plaintiff's theory, is it not?
In order to accommodate
the employee, the employer, this is the theory of the plaintiff, is what I'm saying, is that in order to accommodate the employer must resolve the disability that requires the accommodation in the first place. And that's not something we've seen in any case in New Jersey, is it?
Yeah, that's quite clearly not the law here in New Jersey, and it's not the law under the ADA as far as I'm aware. As I stated before, the accommodations that are generally provided under the ADA or under the LAD are not surgical in nature, they're not medical in nature, they're more modifications to on-the-job items such as schedule, such as, you know, the chair a person sits in, how high their desk is, how
lifting,
many bathroom breaks they get during the day, things
lift.
Like that.
So even if you had undisputed expert testimony on both sides saying this surgery will enable the individual to return full-time and perform all of the functions of the duties of a police officer, not a reasonable accommodation?
I would say not, Justice Rabner. And the reason is not only the reasons that we just discussed under the ADA and under the LAD, but also in this particular case, because there was both workers' compensation benefits available, had plaintiffs sought out the enforcement remedies, there were also health insurance benefits available to plaintiff. He was a full-time police officer with the city of Jersey City. He was in the police officers union. He had full-time health benefits.
You're saying he had a remedy to make sure if in fact that occurred and there was undeniable a need for, and he was cleared for knee surgery, he could force that through the workers' compensation system, and if there was a failure in that system that was an unwarranted failure, he could press that into superior court based on not only the original comp statute but the additional remedies that were provided in the amendment.
Yes, that's right. And he could also, one of the cases suggests out of the Larson Treatise on workers' comp that another option available to injured employees in this situation would be even to go out of pocket and provide themselves with the medical care that was necessary to heal themselves, and then under the workers' compensation statutes, then seek that as reimbursement from the employer. That would also require probably going through the judges of compensation, perhaps in an enforcement proceedings.
But your response indicates that you see the remedy really through the silo of the workers' comp scheme, correct?
Justice LaVecchia, yes, I do. And the reason that I do that is because the legislature, in drafting the Workers' Compensation Act and amending it over the years and refining it and tweaking it over the years, has pretty much left us with that conclusion, that it is, as we all acknowledge, an exclusive remedy doctrine, and to allow employees to sort of go outside of that lane without a specific authorization in the statute, such as the anti-retaliation provision, intentional acts provision, or the provision that we're talking about now, after an enforcement order is entered, and the judge of compensation has determined that the employer or the carrier just didn't follow it, you can get to superior court that way. But absent a specific provision or a specific regulation in the Workers' Compensation Act that would authorize an employee to go to superior court on an LAD claim, it's the opinion of the JCPD that such a claim wouldn't exist.
Just to be clear, this plaintiff never filed a motion in workers' comp to compel medical treatment.
That's correct.
Okay. And that right, did that right to file such a motion end with the settlement, or does it continue?
So under the Workers' Compensation Act, after a case is settled for a cash payment, as it was in this case, there is a reopener provision, and that would be available.
Has that ever been filed?
I don't know, Judge. The record on this case closed before it would have. Perhaps my adversary could tell you that.
Ever filed as of the time the record closed?
What's that?
Ever filed as of the time the record closed?
The reopener was not filed as of the time that the record closed on summary judgment in this case. If it has been filed since then, I wouldn't know. And those facts aren't before us.
It's not part of the record. Okay.
I think one of the very important aspects of this case on the reasonable accommodation front that the appellate division seems to have missed was, what are the essential functions of a police officer? And for that, I think that there are a couple of things that...
I think we understand that the police officer has to be able to walk. I mean, so...
That's true, Judge. That's true.
I don't think that's not going to be, I think, an object of contention here.
That aside, anything else you'd like to add?
Walking the beat.
I think we have the gist of your argument.
No, I guess we're running out of time. One last point briefly. One of the other elements that a plaintiff needs to prove in a failure to accommodation case is there was an adverse employment action taken by the employer. Here, that wasn't the case. So not only, in our opinion, does plaintiff not meet the second element, the qualified individual element, he also doesn't meet the third element, which is the adverse employment action element. He had put in for his retirement on March 1, 2011, which was the date he actually retired. He had on two prior occasions in the recent few months before that also put in for his retirement, but then either pulled it back or extended it out to the date that he actually retired on. There was no such attempt to do that in this case, even with all the things that were going on with his meetings with the police chief and the deputy chief and the medical bureau commander. He did indeed go forward and retire in March of 2011, as his paperwork most recently suggested, and therefore there is really no adverse employment action whatsoever in this case. Thank you.
Ms. Sharn.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'll be very brief, in the interest of lunch. Your Honors, this matter has been exhaustively briefed. So in the interest of time, we will adopt the arguments of Jersey City and also rely on our brief. But I'd like to make just a couple public policy questions. But first, I'd like to address the questions that you had about the reasonable accommodation regarding surgery. It just doesn't make sense to have surgery be equated to a reasonable accommodation because of too many variables. If I'm an injured employee, I have a back injury, I come in and one of my reasonable accommodations may be I can't lift more than 50 pounds. And that's based on a medical professional saying, okay, you know, we have a lot of these cases, you're probably not going to re-injure your back if you don't lift more than 50 pounds. But when you're talking about knee surgery, you know, there's an element of medical predictability. How can you say that knee surgery as a reasonable accommodation will work? Because there's variables, not only the health of the claimant, but how well they comply with physical therapy and other doctor's orders. And I think in the end, there's just too many variables.
Well, you would know if he got it. And one of the points in your brief is all he had to do was apply through the Workers' Compensation Act for an order of the court compelling Jersey City to provide the operation, right?
Right.
And then if he had the knee surgery that way, we'd all know whether or not he was able to perform the essential functions of the duty.
Right. I guess my comment relates to considering surgery as a reasonable accommodation.
Mm-hmm. Even if there were no workers' comp component to this case.
Right. Yes. Yes,
understood.
Exactly, Your Honor. On a broad level, I guess one of the things that we find troubling is that if we're going to take what happens in the workers' comp court, where we have decisions that are made ultimately based on what medical professionals say. It's the doctors that are really determining what sort of treatment is appropriate, what sort of occupational therapy or physical therapy is required, and the public employer is relying on that information. So that happens in that court. We have checks and balances that have already been discussed under workers' comp. But the employer isn't really the one making those medical decisions because as an employer, I'm not qualified to do that. But then we take that and we sort of send that over to the LAD arena where it's being used as a basis of a reasonable accommodation claim. We're sort of reopening that and judging the employer because under LAD, the employer is the one that's solely responsible for making decisions about reasonable accommodations. Mm-hmm. We have to take an employee as they are. We aren't permitted or would never look back into their workers' comp claim and say, well, your doctor said you could have had this medical procedure, but you didn't. You could have done physical therapy, but you weren't compliant. You didn't go enough times during the week. Therefore, we shouldn't have to accommodate you as much as if you had complied and had a different result with the workers' comp. So it sort of cuts both ways. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a good reason to have that boundary between the Workers' Comp Act and between the cases under LAD. And I think if the appellate division decision is allowed to stand, it creates really disharmony between two systems that seem to both work very well and seem to have harmony between
them. Is one of your arguments that if workers' comp isn't used as it could have been here, someone may be encouraged to game the system?
Yes.
I won't get the remedy under workers' comp, so I can file this LAD claim and perhaps get greater benefits that are not obtainable under the Workers' Compensation Act.
Exactly, Your Honor. As a public employer, you know, under workers' comp, claimants have a bunch of different options. They can come to an agreement with the employer on their own. They can file a request for an informal hearing that is not binding. And then they can file a request to have a formal hearing before a judge of compensation that is binding. But along that way, and, you know, there may be a progression. What if an employee says, oh, I don't like the way things are going here, but you know what, if you don't give me what I want, and I'll go over to this other forum and I'll file a LAD claim, and then you will be subject to punitive damages and compensatory damages, damages that you weren't qualified to obtain under the Workers' Comp Act. So there's that sort of threat to public employers, and that's certainly a very serious concern of ours. And as counsel already alluded to, we do submit that this would lead to additional needless lawsuits. Public entities would be subject to litigation costs, especially discovery costs, which, as everyone knows, are expensive, and lead to inconsistent opinions between the workers' comp judges and the superior court judges.
Thank you.
So if unless your honors have any other questions, I will just close by saying that AMICI would submit that Jersey City's position follows the express language and statutory intent of the Workers' Comp Act, maintains the harmony between the Workers' Comp Act and LAD, and in no way limits plaintiffs' rights under these statutory schemes. Thank you, your honors.
Thank you, Mr. Curley. Let's see if we can get through.
15 minutes, Judge, I don't know, but we'll see. May it please the court and Justice Rabner, I would like to reserve, I can't specify time, but some rebuttal after all of the arguments.
Petition?
Excuse me?
You have a cross petition?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Do you have a cross petition?
No, I do not.
No, sir, rebuttal, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In sitting and hearing the arguments, there is no factual support for what's being argued. They are arguing in the abstract. This is not a case where my client is seeking to remedy the failure to get knee surgery. That is not what this case is about. This case is about he was terminated while he was in a disabled condition that they held the keys to. That's what this case is about. And from a legal perspective, to nail it down to the fundamental issue, whether he is deserving of an accommodation. The accommodation in this case was, much to my surprise, counsel now takes the position that the surgery was not approved. Your Honors, I submitted an extensive, to the page limit, supplemental brief that addressed that issue up, down, and sideways. It was absolutely approved. Dr. Jaffe was the bookend to this. In April of 2006, he recommended the knee surgery because Detective Caraballo, he thought, could not perform the duties without it, either then or in the future. They sent him back to full duty. January of 2011, the same Dr. Jaffe, who has now by then seen my client four or five times, I think, at least three, they just kept circulating among the same doctors, tells them, absolutely, he needs the knee surgery. What are you waiting for is the essence of Dr. Jaffe's evaluation at that point in time. I am astounded that the city's Rule 4:14-2C appointed witness, Mr. Soriero, the risk management director, testified pretty much unequivocally that Detective Caraballo was entitled to the surgery, that he was approved for the surgery, and that essentially his department dropped the ball by not scheduling it after of April of 2006. So how we get to the point where it is said or presented that the surgery was not approved in response to the question, I don't know what else had to be said. You have their own doctor's reports saying it's absolutely critical. You have the risk management director who binds the city saying absolutely approved, absolutely entitled to. You have the union contract that says he's entitled to medical leave to have that surgery and then be reevaluated for a return to duty. You have the city's appointed witness on that subject affirm that is what should have happened. So the issue here is, should he have had that accommodation before he was fired? Not should he have had it, not are we seeking to compel it now, but when they crossed over on March 1st and constructively terminated him, they crossed this threshold out of the Workers' Comp Act and into the LAD. Because under the LAD, and under the regulation under the LAD, 13:13-2.5b2. You cannot terminate him until you've considered the reasonable accommodation. This court has affirmed that in exactly the same way.
What is the reasonable accommodation, counsel? What is the reasonable accommodation? The knee surgery?
Medical leave to have the surgery and then recover and come back to be retested.
So the knee surgery?
The knee surgery is a
component. With the incidentals, before and after, of course. But that the accommodation you suggest was provided was the knee surgery?
The opportunity to have the knee surgery. Correct, Justice.
Opportunities. Without the knee surgery, wouldn't have done anything. So the knee surgery is what you're talking
the
about.
Knee
That's
surgery.
The accommodation. Let's
yes. Yes, sir.
Okay.
So that was a component. Yes. Yeah. But who held the keys
was there
to
ever,
that?
Was there ever an application to enforce that under the Workers' Compensation Act?
Not to my knowledge.
Was it ever discussed during the settlement of the Workers' Compensation Act?
I did not represent Mr. Caraballo on the Workers' Compensation. I cannot speak to what was discussed.
Is there any duty on the part of your client to help with the scheduling of the surgery and those steps with the preliminary testing for surgery and approval?
If he had been scheduled for it, he would have gone for it. He wasn't scheduled to do that until 3 weeks after he was fired. So that's the problem here is the city had it. All right, we come down to the nub of this. The nub of this is it his responsibility to go bring an action in the workers' comp claim?
Why not? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
So, look, an accident occurs in 1999. You, okay, I'm going to say you because you're a client. You file a Workers' Compensation Act in 2001. Your client is hobbling around for years. Let's take the fact that you've now received favorable opinions for the knee surgery in 2006 or 7 and 8. Why on earth would you not move to enforce your right to get the knee surgery through the Workers' Compensation Court if there was any backsliding or resistance by the city?
Judge, or Justice, I look at that and I cannot speak to why Workers' Comp Counsel at that point in time. He wrote letters demanding the surgery, but the point I was just going to get
to. Assume there is a point of contention on this issue. There is an enforcement mechanism through the Workers' Compensation Act. Before the Workers' Compensation judge, you say my client needs knee surgery, here is the doctor's report, and the judge will then order the surgery. Like, why would you be waiting another 6 years until the city is moving forward an involuntary retirement of your client?
If I may, Your Honor,
sure.
Because that was not the issue. The issue here is the termination of his employment. So I understand Your Honor's point.
Sure, but by 2011 or 12, his knees have been deteriorating over all those years. He needed knee surgery. You would think that if he wanted the knee surgery, in all those years, he would have made some effort to enforce his right to get it. No?
But respectfully, that's not the issue. The issue is, can they terminate him in a disabled status?
You say it's not the issue, but he's in the Workers' Compensation Court. And you know from the questions that have been asked from the bench is, why wasn't he availing himself of his rights under the Act?
I cannot answer him. I did not represent him then.
Don't you think that's strange?
I think it is an open question that I think in the context of the circumstances of why the workers' comp attorney did not take that action.
So the question...
But also, he wrote the letters. But also, under the circumstances, what is the city doing is the city has the keys to this. All the city has
to do is
schedule it.
So I guess they could have done it, provided your client would have shown up for the surgery. But the question here...
There's no evidence he would not.
Okay.
There is some evidence in the record that he made them make arrangements to contact the doctors. That type of thing, whether it's contested or not, there's some evidence in the record that there was some lack of effort by your client, too. Would you agree with me on that?
No, I would not. Definitely would not, Justice Hitt. Here's why. That record is false. That record is the basis of false information that timed...
What proof do you have of that? Did you depose anybody?
Yes.
Do you have records to the contrary?
We have the testimony of Mr. Soriero Lieutenant McClellan, the two Rule 4, 14.
Assume there's conflict, okay, that has to be resolved by some judicial officer. The question, you've heard this from questions asked of Jersey City, is why should we be converting what may be a simple workers' compensation case into a LAD claim when the Workers' Comp Act has an enforcement provision whereby your client could get the surgery, the relief that he required? Go ahead.
Because the premise in your question, Justice, is that we are seeking the surgery. When, as I've tried to articulate, the issue under the LAD...
Wait, you didn't want the surgery?
He did. But he didn't want to be terminated more.
And now you want LAD damages.
Now you want both.
You're
saying that the accommodation, the failure to accommodate, was a refusal to give the surgery. The refusal to give the surgery, if you are right that he was entitled to it and that he wanted it, and I'm leaving the facts aside, if you are right, assuming you're right, he wanted it, he was entitled, medically appropriate for him, and he would have gone ahead and done it. He could have resolved the disability and solved the entire problem through the administrative mechanism of the Workers' Comp Act.
I don't disagree with that premise up to that point, Justice. It's the next step.
Well, okay, so you agree that he had the opportunity to resolve administratively essentially, assuming that the surgery was successful, to eliminate his disability. He had the ability to take legal action in the comp world to get the surgery that would have, assuming it worked for him, resolved his disability and allowed him to go back to work.
His workers' comp attorney could have done in the workers' comp proceeding.
Okay, so you are saying that even though he had the ability to pursue, and if you're right about the facts, a likely win in either comp, or if necessary, to go to Superior Court under the enforcement mechanism, if he had the ability to win that battle within the specter of compensation plus the enforcement mechanism, you are saying that the failure of the city to give him the same result, the knee surgery, is a failure to accommodate a disability.
No. Respectfully, no, that is not my argument.
Okay, so your argument is that he was constructively terminated because he was unable to do the job, and that that could have been resolved had they approved the surgery. Isn't that your argument?
The argument is he was disabled at the time of his termination. Under the LAD, he is entitled to a reasonable accommodation. The surgery was approved, all that I had said before, and I want to point out as well, Justice, that any issues as to the record and anything that may be a question of fact, this case is before the court on a review of summary judgment.
Understood.
But we're talking about they have to be taken in our favor.
But I'm talking about the legal question, as I see this before the court, is the failure, assuming you're right about all the reasons for summary judgment, is the failure of the city to pay for his knee surgery a reasonable accommodation of a disability?
I would phrase it differently, respectfully. The argument is, at the time he is terminated, under the law, under the LAD, they are obligated. They cannot terminate him until they consider the reasonable accommodation. Whatever preceded...
So you're saying the resolution, the medical resolution of his disability is a necessary accommodation to that disability. Is that really what LAD is talking about with an accommodation?
No, and that's not what I'm talking about either. Let me try it again. What I'm saying is, on March 1st, you can forget everything that happened the 5 years before. Where you find Detective Caraballo on March 1st, 2011, he is disabled. That is not contested. He is entitled to the surgery, and he's entitled to the medical leave to have the surgery and come back for reevaluation. With all due respect
entitled
to counsel,
why?
That is not in contested.
Entitled either. Why? Entitled under a workers' compensation law?
No, under the LAD. NJAC 13:13-2.5.
Well, let's say that's... Let's say it's contested. Let's say, they may not think that even with the surgery, your client is going to be able to perform the essential functions. But I guess if you get the surgery, you can prove it. Like,
said he could.
This is what I'm baffled by, and maybe you can. It looks from my little perch over here as though this is like a litigation strategy. I won't get the knee surgery that I can get through the workers' comp because I have this law against discrimination suit that is in my quiver right now.
I would disagree respectfully, Justice, and here's
go one. Ahead.
Because you can look at this from the exact opposite perspective. It's a litigation strategy on the part of the city. The city is self-insured. Two knee replacements, treatment, recovery, reevaluation, pay for at least a year, full pay, while he's not even working. That's a very expensive proposition for the city. So the city, and I believe this is what the record demonstrates, what the city does is they just keep shuffling him around. It would be the equivalent of sending me to one justice, to the next justice, to the next justice, to the next justice, and taking me back to the start again.
Assume that you're, in the vernacular, getting jerked around.
Exactly.
Okay. You've got the Workers' Compensation Act. Why would, in a sensible system where you have that act, why wouldn't you first enforce your rights under the act before trying to go to some other illegal scheme?
Because he keeps seeing these doctors for one reason, who keep telling him, you'll
get
the knee surgery.
Did he ever file a motion? Did he ever file a motion?
No, sir, as I said,
no.
He did not.
Okay. So we don't know what the comp court would have done.
Correct.
They might have ordered the surgery, might have said pay for it. And if you,
I was trying to get to that point.
And I just got to it.
Thank
so
you.
In 2011, he retires.
Right.
You're saying he's terminated.
Constructively terminated, yes.
Okay, constructive termination. He retires in 11. When does he settle the comp case?
I believe it was 2 years, 9 months after
and
he was terminated.
And did anything happen between him retiring, getting his retirement, limping around on these bad knees, and the settlement in 2013 to enforce the Comp Act and get his medical treatment?
At that point, he is now going on 62, 63.
I'm just asking, yes or no?
No, sir.
No. No motion filed then?
No, sir.
LAD claim filed?
I'm sorry?
LAD claim filed.
LAD claim was filed.
Okay.
Suppose in a case like this, in March 2011, the chief, instead of saying, you know, you're going to retire or you're going to go on disability, he says, listen, we got to take care of this problem. It's been dragging on long enough. I'm going to give you a little bit more time and won't bring it to a head today. And then 5 more years pass, hypothetically.
Well, then we have a very different situation.
And nothing gets done. Still, that 1999 accident has not been fully resolved. Can you bring a LAD claim?
Under those facts, which are different than our facts, I would say it would be difficult. You would have the argument that's being made now. My point is the argument that's being made now is the actions in the record by the city, which are admitted, and again, we're here on summary judgment, those actions demonstrate and the inference is that the city is stalling him while leading him on by sending him to each doctor who tells him, you're going to get the surgery. So his attorney writes the letters. He needs the surgery. Where's the surgery? Is an action brought to compel it? No. Could it have been? Yes. But the intervening cause here is the termination. Because once we cross over into the termination, there's a jury issue here. And that jury issue is, who's going to make the determination of whether he was entitled to the reasonable accommodation?
There's no jury issue if medical care is not a reasonable accommodation.
No, there is a jury issue. The jury respectfully, is who's going to make that determination? The workers' comp judge?
No.
Or the jury?
Never mind.
So the issue is, when they cross that termination threshold, now he's being terminated in a disabled condition before they provided the reasonable accommodation. Who has the keys to the reasonable accommodation? The city.
So it's true.
And back to your question, Justice, if I may, just to finish this thought.
Sure.
Back to your question and circling around to it is, it's gamed from the same position by the city. The city is jerking him around. The city is sending over 5 years stalling for. And again, with respect to counsel who said opposite, and I submit is wrong, the record shows it was approved, he was entitled to it, they admit that, there is no denial of benefits.
Can I give you an alternative? I hate to break in. Can I give you an alternative? The workers' comp judge had the keys. He wants the surgery. Workers' comp judge sitting there. He's on the bench. He's waiting for somebody to come to him. I'll order those sons of guns to approve it and put you in the hospital tomorrow. But happens all the time.
He's been terminated, forced to make it a time.
So what? So what? Who holds the keys, you asked? The employer? No. There's a comp claim filed. There's a judge there before he was terminated. He's got the keys. Statute says he's got the keys. Statute provides for that remedy. That's just not the employer.
Well,
a comp judge ultimately has control, complete control.
If there was a denial here, and we're not talking about
No. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm giving you an alternative. The employer doesn't, if they're unwilling, unable, they have a dispute, the comp judge has the keys to whether he gets the treatment or not. All he's got to do is file the application. If he gets denied by the comp judge, going back to what Justice Alvin said, your strategy, he's out of luck. He's out of luck. But well, if it's granted and he still doesn't get it, he can go to Superior Court. Not LAD. Superior Court and enforce it. Have him held in contempt. Fines, penalties. I guess maybe even, I don't know, I'm not going to say jail, but a lot of bad things. What in the world was going on? How do you justify not going to the guy with the keys on the bench
Could
in
be
the comp
woman.
Court? Or a woman. Well, the generic guy. What in the world justifies that in this case? And doesn't the comp law specifically say that's your remedy when you're injured in the course of your employment? Your remedy is compensation court. LAD doesn't change that. Nothing changes that.
If the issue was solely that he is standing here saying, I need the knee surgery, the knee surgery was part of the accommodation he wanted to try and to continue to work. Once
so
he's
that
out
is,
the door...
That is your answer to Justice Patterson's question is yes. The knee surgery is the accommodation.
It is a component of the accommodation.
What's the other
component?
I forget about it. Okay, I give up.
It is.
What's the other accommodation?
It's core, but the rest of it is to have the medical leave to go get it done. The whole point of the LAD claim is that he was disabled when he was terminated.
I think we understand your position. Is there a different argument you want to advance, or are we at a good break point?
That's probably a good break to allow me to regroup and come back.
No, that's not what I meant.
All right, if you can give me a minute.
No. I meant, do you have more that you want to present?
May I have a moment just to go through?
Of course. This? Mr. Goldman, how much time do you anticipate you would need? We are...
Question based upon any questions, but minimum of 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes, but it depends upon questions. So
you do know that we allot 5 minutes to amici, and we're generous with that.
Well, I understand that, but in listening to some previous arguments, obviously, it really depends upon some of the questions that may be... Oh, if there are no questions, then I'll
I got it.
I would like just to point out to one of the points in my supplemental brief, the dual role issue that I raised, and that is that under the circumstances where the city is serving both as the workers' comp insurer and the employer, they go beyond just providing insurance services, which this court in the Basil v. Wolf case held could serve for the basis for coming out from that umbrella of the workers' comp statute. The issue here being, as I alluded to earlier, the whole basis for the termination was a false memo saying that Detective Caraballo was not cooperating. The falsity of that memo was established with Lieutenant McClellan, the Rule 4:14 witness, who testified that it was false, but he passed it on to Chief Comey, and relying on that information, Chief Comey initiated the termination. The point to that is the city here was running workers' comp and health-related issues and the police and everything as one entity. And that's demonstrated by the fact that that information was passing, confidential medical information, passing from workers' comp insurance to the employer. And then the employer is reporting back to workers' comp insurance on whatever they find out, and workers' comp was even, at least in one instance, copying Lieutenant McClellan on memos concerning Detective Caraballo's health. The point to that being, this court has already held that if you're going to go that far and go beyond the traditional, here's the workers' comp insurer, here's the employer, then you have crossed out from under that umbrella of the workers' comp statute. So that under these circumstances where, essentially the city was running everything as one entity. They can't claim the exclusivity and so forth, and the bar that they're arguing under the Basil v. Wolf. I'd also point out the Rothfuss v. Bankers, also cited in my brief. The federal district court case, Davis v. One Beacon in 2010. Basil was decided in 2007 by this court. And the Hinojo case in the appellate division in 2002.
Well, Hinojo was a product liability aspect. That doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, it serves the same purpose in the sense that the court there held that because the insurer had gone out from under and engaged in activities that did not fit the mold of an insurer, the insurer was now out from under the workers' comp statute.
The insurer was engaging in activities that are simply not within comp.
Correct.
What you're saying here is that the insurer, simply because the insurer was the city was self-insured, that dual role applies. That concept is very different. That's talking about situations where the employer takes on a role that is the legislature has simply excluded from workers' compensation, and we don't have that here. He's the employer. It's the employer. That's all it is. It's not the manufacturer of something involved with his accident. So that really is not a relevant case, I would submit.
Well, I would say, Your Justice, that respectfully, the issue here, different somewhat from Hinojo, is that the city was not separating its duties as an insurer and as the employer. When it's communicating and actually terminating on a false but essentially confidential information as to what Detective Caraballo is alleged to be doing with his health.
But there's nothing that it is doing that takes it out of comp. I don't want to belabor it in the interest of time, but that's it. That line of cases is a strong line of cases where it applies, but this is a very different situation, I would respectfully submit.
Thank you. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Associate Justices, may it please the court. You know, as I sit here, you listen to the attorney for the Jersey City Police Department, you think it's a workers' compensation case. You listen to my co-counsel, it's all about the law against discrimination. And I think it's very important for this court to somehow reconcile the two without making workers' comp an exclusive remedy. Now, why do I say that? I know Justice Solomon was questioning Mr. Curley on, well, how come he didn't seek enforcement under the Workers' Compensation Act to get the surgery? We've talked about a lot of factual situations here. Let's talk about this factual situation. Because don't forget, he was working up until the time he was forced into retirement. So even though he had this bad knee, he had been working. The chief came up to him and said, listen, here are your two options. We're going to put you on disability retirement, or you're going to retire. You're on your own. He had no choice. Let's assume the day after that, after he's fired, he then goes to his workers' comp attorney and starts trying to get the surgery that everybody says he needs. Workers' comp judge orders it a few months later. Jersey City doesn't like it, they appeal it, and then all of a sudden, there may be a decision in his favor, but it's more than 2 years after he's fired. What does he do at that point? The adverse employment action is the termination. It's not a data discovery type of situation where we know in medical malpractice cases, you know, if you don't find a sponge in until 3 years later, obviously you would have no way of knowing that. But it's termination. So
wait,
he's terminated.
He wasn't terminated. He went on disability, no?
No. He was forced into retirement.
You're saying it was a constructive discharge.
It was constructive discharge. And that's the position that the plaintiff has always taken, that he was, quote, terminated because he had no option. So the facts show, not only he retired under protest, he didn't take any retirement benefits for well over a year, because he didn't want to retire. So let's assume that it's correct that it was constructive discharge. Now let's assume that he gets the surgery granted. But it's not until after 2 years after he's been terminated. That could happen depending upon the process and the appellate division ruling, et cetera. Gets the surgery, now he's ready to go back to work. What are his options at that point? He's not. Why? Because he's already been terminated.
Well, are you familiar with our disability laws?
Excuse me?
Are you familiar with our disability laws?
Yes.
I you can correct me, but I was under the impression, at least for accidental disability, if you wind up getting treatment or modalities that bring you to a point where you can now perform your duties, that you could be taken off of that retirement pension, the disability retirement pension. Am I mistaken about that?
I am not sure about that, absolutely. I don't know if that's the case. I've never heard of that situation, maybe because...
I thought that periodically the person had to be reviewed, the worker has to be, the retiree has to be reviewed to make certain the person is still eligible for the disability pension.
Well, he went under disability retirement. I don't know how that's defined in this particular case.
I'm only raising because you're saying, well, what would happen 2 years later if he had
right.
the knee surgery? It may be if he had the knee surgery and he was able to run the marathon that he'd be able to go back to work.
He may have been go back to work, but then if they, for example, let's assume they deny him coming back to work, then he would potentially have a failure to accommodate claim. But he would have no way to present that claim because he's now barred by the statute of limitations.
Wouldn't your entire hypothetical be avoided if he actually sought the surgery timely before retiring? Wouldn't that resolve your entire hypothetical? Because you're suggesting that your hypothetical suggests that he was terminated or constructively discharged and then he waited a couple more years to actually get the surgery and then take a couple more years to go through the appellate division. If that had been done before the whether it was retirement or constructive discharge, your entire hypothetical can be avoided.
Well, there are a lot of ways that the hypothetical could be avoided. For example, let's assume when the chief gave him the ultimatum. Now, let's not forget, he had been working at light duty there. So it wasn't as if they said, you can't work under light duty. He had been working on light duty there. But at some point, the chief, I don't know whether he got some indication from the mayor or something else, but at some point the chief said, listen, enough's enough. You either have to, you have to go out into retirement. You have to do this. Now, the chief could have also said, and that's why I'm bringing this back, because a lot of what was decided in the appellate division was factually based. There are still many, many facts that have to come out of this case, which, in my opinion, don't mean that it's either workers' comp or LAD. Let me continue with what I was saying. Let's assume that the day he's going to before it's into retirement, he tells the chief, listen, I really want to have surgery. Can I have time to force workers' compensation court to grant me the surgery? Okay, you can still work on light duty. And let's assume that within the next year, he then gets the surgery and now says, okay, I'm fine. All I need is an accommodation X, Y, and Z.
Wait a minute. If he files the motion for the medical treatment,
excuse me?
If he files the motion for the medical treatment with comp, and the employer says, well, we can't continue this job, they've got to now pay him temporary total disability payments until he gets the surgery and goes back to work.
They don't have to, in workers' comp, very interesting, they don't have to maintain his job. You do not, even if you're properly on med
and temp. Then he might have a good LAD claim.
Exactly.
But that's not what we have here.
Well,
he had the absolute right to file the motion for medical treatment and seek temporary total disability payments while he's out. And if they do anything, certainly better off than he is here. If he can go back to work and they don't take him back, he may have an LAD claim. But that's not what we have here.
Well, we have a lot of different things here. We have
that's
a potential.
True.
We have potential. If you want it, listen, we have to accept the facts as we see them right now. And arguments can be made based upon the facts.
So I'm not making an argument. I'm just saying the scenario you present is irrelevant.
It's not, because what if it was always
the intention?
I'm not
talking what if. What if we know the dates, we know he never filed an application, end of question, right?
No, because what if it determined that the JCPD was playing a game with him to force him to retire, and that would happen? Well,
let's get out of the hypotheticals for just a moment.
Okay.
Let's deal with some facts.
Okay.
In 2006, Mr. Caraballo is treated by Dr. Rao and Dr. Jaffe, and Dr. Jaffe added that Caraballo was not a candidate to return to work as a police officer either now or in the future based on the disability and his evaluation. That's in 2006. Then in 2007, we have counsel for Mr. Caraballo requesting that he get the knee surgery in 08. So, I mean, years before, they're moving for, okay, you're due to retirement. The issue about his knee and his inability to perform the essential functions of a police officer have well been laid out on the record.
But then...
And Mr. Caraballo apparently is not availing himself of the remedies under the Workers' Compensation Act.
Well, I think partially that's accurate, Justice Albom, but let's not forget some of the testimony below, which is one of the reasons why he was terminated by during a deposition was because he refused to go to certain medical examinations. And then the facts turned out during the deposition, well, he did go to these medical examinations. So there could be an argument made that they were playing this game. So what I'm saying simply is that whatever decision this court makes, it can't make a hard and fast rule. It could make it with limited to the facts of this case, but it can't make a hard and fast rule that any employment issue that arises out of the Workers' Compensation Act must be resolved by the Workers' Compensation Court.
I think you answered the question I was about to pose. You're here as a friend of the court.
Yes.
What's the principled statement you propose?
The principled statement I propose is that there is no exclusive remedy, as has been argued in this case regarding a workers' compensation remedy, that everything is factually based, that a potential plaintiff has a right to pursue the LAD, mainly because the LAD is a much broader statute, it's remedial in nature, and it's designed to eradicate all discrimination in the workplace.
Didn't you just throw Section 8 of the Workers' Compensation Act out, not an exclusive remedy? That's what it says. The legislature has told us it provides an exclusive remedy, except in the enumerated exceptions.
Well, right. It provides an exclusive remedy, and the cases that were cited, the Stancil case, all deal with matters revolving workers' compensation, medical benefits, temporary benefits, permanency benefits. They don't deal with potentially being fired or wrongfully discharged.
They deal with provision of the medical care.
The medical care only. That's it.
Because of a medical condition. So let me, you're giving us hypotheticals. Let me give you a hypothetical.
Okay.
See how you deal with this. So under our reasonable accommodation theory, if a fireman has a heart condition, a congenital heart condition, such that he cannot walk up 3 flights of stairs, is the employer required to pay for heart surgery or a heart transplant?
No.
Under our LAD?
No.
Why not?
Because
and then how does it segue into this case?
Well, I understand. I think I understand where you're going. I am not here to argue exactly the same way that Mr. Curley did, that the surgery itself is an accommodation, okay? I understand the position of the court. I understand how that is a difficult position to accept, but that doesn't change the fact that if there's an adverse employment action, it could turn out ultimately, if this matter ultimately goes to trial, it could turn out that a jury determines everything that he did was not reasonable. and he should have pursued his legal rights under workers' comp to get the surgery. That is accurate. But the other part is, doesn't the jury have a right to determine that whether the actions of the Jersey City Police Department were intended to violate his rights under the law against discrimination?
Okay, so take this out of workman's comp for one second. And the injury to Mr. Carballo's knees occurred in an automobile accident while he was going to the supermarket. Would Jersey City have any obligation to provide for him knee replacement surgery?
No, not to provide knee replacement surgery, but certainly to provide him with an accommodation that is reasonable.
But assume that the injuries to his knees are such that without a knee replacement, he's not going to be able to perform the essential functions of his job.
Then absolutely they could terminate him. But I don't think...
What is the distinction here? Because that's basically what you're seeking. You're asking this court to say that medical treatment, such as surgery, can be an accommodation.
Well,
that's what you're saying.
Well, we are saying that, but at the same... Well, not exactly. Because under the hypothetical that Justice Albin just gave me, there is no other related issue with regard to medical treatment or not. So it's a clean case. Just like it would be a clean case if, in fact, he was able to pursue the workers' comp matter and ultimately it was ruled in his favor and there were no actions taken against him in the interim. That is what makes this different than the case that Justice Albin just provided to
us. What makes this case different, I would suggest, is that there's a workers' compensation, arguably a workers' compensation obligation imposed by legislation on the employer to provide that surgery. That's what makes this case different from Justice Albin's hypothetical, is it not?
That and the fact
he's better off under the Workers' Compensation Act. We have a wonderful system that if you're injured on the job, you're able to get treatment through the workers' compensation carrier or through the employer. And if there's any hedging by the employer, we have statutes that permit the workers' compensation court to order the treatment.
So let's hear your answer to those comments and then please wrap up your argument.
Okay, you're absolutely correct. But the one thing that takes us a little bit different path is the actions of the JCPD, the actions in their termination and the reasons for their termination. They said, oh, we're terminating him not because he has a disability, although they are saying that too, but you failed to comply with our request to get examined by our doctors. That turned out not to be true. So what are his options other than getting the medical treatment? How does he save his job? There's no way to save his job other than through the LAD.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Carbone, did you want to offer rebuttal?
First, to address the point about whether or not a disabled employee can be terminated, the answer is absolutely he can be. The question is, does the nature and extent of the disability prevent the performance of the essential functions, or stated otherwise, as this court did in RASPA, does the employee have the bona fide qualifications to perform the job? In this case, the medical evidence is clear. The answer is no. Also, under the regulation from the Division of Civil Rights, I believe, NJAC 1313, speaking about accommodations, plaintiff was accommodated in this case for years. He had light duty accommodations, he had paid time off, he had combinations of the two. And again, as I said in my earlier statements, medical treatment is just not a accommodation or the provision of surgery. To Justice Albin's point about disability retirement and being the attorney for a large police force, I guess I know these things. If a disabled police officer does retire from his disability and the disability resolves, the employing municipality is required to take him back, absent certain other exceptions like, he's committed a crime or some other kind of thing. So to plaintiff's counsel's point and amicus point, that was an absolute possibility in this case. Even if he did retire or resign because of this disability, and the disability resolved itself, he could have came back. That's all I have. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, and thank you to council for coming.